Welcome back to another episode of the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Gorski, and in this week's episode, I want to talk about two things. They're both related to autism, and they're both very, very, very misunderstood. The first is sensory processing disorder, and the second is meltdowns. And then I want to expand on the meltdowns a little bit and kind of help you understand the differences between a meltdown and a tantrum. That's a really confusing thing. A lot of people conflate the two, and they're not at all the same. So we'll maybe clear up some of that confusion. And then a bit later, we'll talk to my youngest son, who deals with sensory issues on a daily basis. He wanted to share some of his insight and personal experience to help us better understand what it's like to live with sensory processing disorder. So that'll be really cool. And again, you can subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And I guess we'll get to it.
The Autism Dad is brought to you by Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First of all, it's free, which is awesome. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, which means no fancy equipment, and that's super convenient. Anchor will also distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, all the popular apps out there. And you can even begin making money from your podcast right away, because there's no minimum listenership required to start monetizing. So that's cool as well. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm to get started. The Autism Dad is brought to you by Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it is 100% free, and it is ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you have always wanted to start your own podcast and you want to get paid to do it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start.
I want to go ahead and start with sensory processing disorder, or SPD, because it really is hard for people to understand kind of what it is and sort of the mechanics behind it. But essentially, someone with SPD, their brain does not interpret sensory input properly, or it misinterprets or doesn't receive properly the sensory input. And so somebody who is dealing with SPD would often hear, taste, smell, see, feel everything all at the same time. And it becomes very overwhelming to them. A common analogy that you hear is a person with sensory processing disorder will walk into a room and there's people having a conversation, there's a TV on, there's a radio playing in the background, there's cars outside, there's a train going on the tracks down the road. The person with sensory processing disorder will hear all of those things, experience all of those things at the same time, and it becomes very distracting and very overwhelming. They have no ability to sort of filter the individual things out and focus on one thing. So it becomes something that overwhelms them very quickly. And it leads to something called overstimulation. And overstimulation is basically just a point that where someone reaches when they have absorbed or taken in as much sensory input as they possibly can, and their bodies just can't process it anymore, and they just sort of shut down, they overload. And a common side effect of overstimulation is a meltdown. And it's the body's way of involuntarily purging all of the stress, the anxiety, everything that's associated with that overstimulation, and it's just a purge. It just unloads it because they don't know what else to do. It's one of the reasons why later on I want to talk about meltdowns versus tantrums a little bit, because it's important that we understand that they are very, very different things and should be treated differently. Commonly, kids with autism will experience sensory processing disorder is a comorbid diagnosis. Not everybody gets it, and you don't have to have autism to deal with sensory processing disorder, but it's just a common comorbid diagnosis. But a lot of things, like in my family, and what I hear commonly from other parents, are usually issues surrounding food, taste, texture, smell, color, presentation, sort of things like that, that sort of dictate what their child will or will not eat. Clothing is another big one. Usually the most common that I hear are shoes and socks. It's one of the ones that we struggle with the most. It's different for everybody. So everybody may have struggles that are, I guess, maybe more significant in one area than another. And everybody's different, just like everybody with autism is different. But there are some sort of commonalities. And those are kind of the things that we hear a lot about in regards to kids with autism. So, Emmett does a really good job of talking about some of these things in the next segment. So what I want to do is just sort of cut this off here and kind of introduce what we're going to do in the next segment. I'm going to kind of talk to Emmett a little bit about the issues, the struggles that he has with food, and then talk about some of the issues with clothing, and he'll explain kind of how it feels and what the actual struggle itself is about for him. And hopefully it'll help you gain some insight into kind of what people with SPD are experiencing, because it is a very real thing. It's not something that's easily understood, but it is very impactful in that person's life, and it can affect every aspect of their life. So stay tuned, and you're going to hear from Emmett. And we're back. As I promised earlier, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking to my youngest son, Mr. Emmett. He lives with a lot of sensory issues that sort of make his life challenging in some areas. So without further ado, say hello.
Hello.
That's Emmett. Emmett is 10 years old, and I've known him a very long time.
10 years.
He doesn't think that's a dad joke. He doesn't think it's funny. Anyhow.
Well, 10 and a half years.
Because you're getting up there. You're getting up there. But what Emmett wanted to do, Emmett asked if he could talk about some of the sensory issues in this podcast, because he knew this is what we're going to be talking about today. And he wanted to share a little bit of his insight and help kind of explain how the sensory things impact him, which can in turn help you understand maybe how it impacts somebody in your life. So let's start with clothes.
I thought we were stuck with food.
Oh, we're going to start with food. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I forgot about that. See, everything's in order.
Food.
All right. Emmett.
I have a feud.
Emmett has a very
problems.
Limited. It's
yeah.
Not, we would call them feeding problems.
Yeah. But it's like I have sensory issues that limit what I like to eat. Like, can't eat vegetables because they're bland and crunchy at the same time. So it's like you're crunching on nothing. And it's just annoying, because if they had taste, it'd be amazing. Potatoes are amazing because they're soft and they have flavor.
Well, but I guess the issue is texture, right? You don't like the texture of the vegetables.
Uh-huh.
And then things taste different to you than they would taste for people who maybe don't have the sensory issues. And so if something tastes off to you, it's going to taste like disgusting, right?
Uh-huh.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
You wanted to bring up the analogy of the two bags of chicken nuggets. Remember?
Yeah.
Emmett, for the longest time. If you have read our story at theautismdad.com, we've been documenting our lives for the last 10 years or so. One of the biggest things that Emmett would eat were Tyson chicken nuggets. It had to be Tyson. It had to be the same bag. The bag had to look the same. The colors had to be the same. He was very particular about it. And there would be times that we would buy chicken nuggets and he wouldn't like them. And he would say they taste funny. Now, if I would taste it, it tasted like chicken nuggets to me. But then we would go buy another bag and he would try that, and it would taste the way that he was expecting it to taste.
Yeah.
And then he'd be fine. But then we would secretly put a chicken nugget from the bag that he didn't like into whatever his lunch was that day. So he had one in there just to see if maybe if he could really taste the difference.
Yeah.
And he would pick out the he would eat the chicken nugget and be like, "This doesn't taste right. I can't eat it." And what we figured out what was happening was he was actually tasting like the difference in the batches. Like maybe the seasoning was off a little bit.
The batter.
Or the breading was a little bit different. And so while most people wouldn't even begin to notice the difference, he can taste the difference.
Sometimes it had too much breading. Sometimes it didn't have enough seasoning. Sometimes it didn't have enough meat. Like I've had a perfect chicken nugget, like a really good chicken nugget. Yeah. It's like filled with meat and the perfect amount of breading. Then I've had nuggets where it's like, why? It's just like a centimeter, like just not even a millimeter more breading, but it ruins the whole chicken nugget. Like,
well,
why?
The point is that the inconsistencies from batch to batch, you can taste them. And we, like, we sort of didn't believe that at first. We thought it was something else. But then we did these like, double-blind tests over time, and he could pick them out all the time. And so that became frustrating. You actually don't eat chicken nuggets anymore, do you?
No.
He won't eat them anymore.
I swapped over to beef. I swapped over to the life of beef.
Emmett, he loves saying the word beef. But he has recently, within the last few years, really kind of gone full bore into eating beef steak, but it has to be cooked to where it's not chewy.
Yeah.
It's got to sort of fall apart in his mouth. And so when that was kind of hard to do, we discovered recently, probably within the last 6 months or so.
Roast.
Yeah. Cause it falls apart and he really likes the roast. So we do that as often as we can. And then there's things like the mac and cheese. Right? Like, you don't like the regular mac and cheese cups?
Yeah, because...
The powdered cheese?
Yeah.
You don't like the texture of the powdered cheese? But no. He'll eat the Velveeta and cheese because it's got a different texture. And so there's...
No, because the cheese has, like, it's actual creamy cheese. Like, it's not powder. It doesn't have a chance of having this, like, grainy, bitter taste.
So it's a texture thing and then a taste thing. Well, why don't we sort of explain some of the things that you're sensitive to? Taste is a big one. Like, you'll taste things that most people can't, right? You're very sensitive to taste.
Same with crunch.
Texture. That's texture.
Yeah, crunch.
Like smell. There's times where you'll be like, oh my gosh, it smells disgusting, and you're the only one that can smell it. Color, right?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the color can affect whether you'll eat something or not. And you don't like your food to touch?
No. Heck no. Heck no. Heck no. Heck no. Burn it with fire with the flamethrower. Burn it with the sun.
Every time we go out to eat, we always have to get, like, if he orders like a breakfast platter or something, and it comes with multiple different items, each item has to be put on a separate plate. And most of the time, the people in the restaurant are very willing to do that. And nobody, I don't think anybody's ever given us a hard time.
Yeah.
But what is it about, why does it have to be on separate plates?
Because, like, once it touches, I can taste food that touched it. And so it's like, it just ruins it. Like, if there's a nice steak.
Like cross-contamination.
Yeah, like eggs. If eggs touch it, it's like, all I can taste is the eggs now.
Okay. And you'll eat eggs sometimes.
Nah.
But they have to be pure yellow, right? Like they can't have any white.
Because the white's bland and the yellow's too strong.
And so it has to be the right color or you won't.
Yeah.
You won't eat it. And that's not easy to do. We've tried that. What else do we want to talk about as far as food goes? Well, we could also say, you know, that as much as we try, a balanced diet is very challenging to find with sensory issues. Because that was a really nice yawn. And so, you know, it is a real problem, and it does impact in real ways. Yeah. And it's not just him being a picky eater. He would rather not eat than have something that is sensory offensive to him. So, you know, the message that Emmett has really is when we were talking about this earlier, you just want people to know that it's real.
Yeah.
And that it does impact people, and that it's not just you're not being difficult or mm-hmm. trying to whatever. So thank you for talking about the food stuff. All right, so we've talked about food.
Now we're moving on to clothing.
Yeah, let's move on to clothing. There were a couple things with clothing that we wanted to really focus on. Shoes and socks and shirts are very challenging for you. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to explain why shirts are so difficult for you to wear.
The seams? Yeah.
That's a common theme. Rhymes with seam.
The seam and the theme.
That I hear from a lot of parents or a lot of even adult autistics who, you know, talk about some of their sensory challenges, and seams are like the bane of their existence. Tags on the back of shirts are another one.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many shirts, you know, we have. Anytime we get a shirt, the first thing it's got to come off are the tags. Well, anything, really. Pants, jackets, everything. You got to have the tags. You can't have tags on them.
I can't.
We really liked when they started stamping or printing the tags on the material itself on the back of the shirts. But
the material.
Seams? What about the material?
Sometimes they just make it too rough. Sometimes it's like...
So like cotton. You don't like cotton? Like the shirt you're wearing right now is... probably like a cotton mix.
It's pretty. It's like not too rough.
You seem to like the shirts that are like dry fit, like you'd get like if you ever run a marathon or you do a race.
No.
You don't like those? I thought you liked those. We're not talking microfiber. We're talking
like
your Everlast shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's but dry fit.
They hide the seams. Most dry fit shirts.
Oh, it's the seams.
Yes.
See, I thought you liked the material. I didn't
yes,
realize it was
and the material.
I didn't realize it was the...
Most dry fit shirts can't hide the seams. They just can't. They can't hide it with the material like that.
Okay, so basically the seams and then the texture of the material.
Yeah.
Right? What about shoes and socks? Because shoes have been an ongoing issue, and socks, for your entire life.
Yes.
Like, up until the last few years?
Fourth.
Well, before school, you wouldn't even wear shoes. You wouldn't wear socks. You wouldn't wear anything on your feet. And as you started getting into school, you had to have something on your feet. And I think you started with flip-flops, or you eventually did flip-flops.
No, I had to start with shoes. They didn't really know what was going on because I was a new student, so I had to wear
And we had
shoes.
To get exceptions so that you could wear flip-flops. And then you moved to Crocs, but never socks.
No, before Crocs, we did water shoes.
Okay, water shoes. And then...
Then Crocs.
Crocs. Then Crocs with socks.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
Crocs and socks.
And then...
slip-on shoes.
Well, yeah, then after years and years, and we have bought dozens of pairs of shoes. We've bought dozens of pairs of shoes in I don't know how many packages of socks over the years. a lot. And then we finally found shoes.
I'm sorry,
but
not sorry at the same time.
You shouldn't be sorry, because it's not your fault. But we finally found consistently that has worked, and it's the Skechers slip-ons, and you'll wear the Skechers socks, right?
Yeah.
What is it about socks that bother you the most?
Like the toe part where it's like the part that covers your toe, and the part that's most likely the darkest and that has the logo on it.
Where they reinforce the toes? Oh, the seam that they have there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to make it, like, super, like...
Let's see, like, all of my socks have those. I don't feel it, but you feel it, and it drives you crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. And what about shoes? Like, what made your... the Skechers that you're wearing, what made them okay?
First off, like, if there was a choice between, I'd kill for socks that didn't have any seams and they were perfect.
Well, we have, well, we wouldn't kill for that, but I get
yes,
your point.
I would. I'd go full on Jason.
Seamless socks. Seamless socks. They're not truly seamless.
Yeah, they have
think.
The
they
seams
still have
on
a
the
seam,
side.
And that still bothers you. So we've tried that. And while it works for a lot of people, it just doesn't work with you. Mm-hmm. But now you're good with the Skechers socks for some reason, and so we just roll with it.
Uh-huh.
All right, so what are the things that we have done to help you with this over the years?
As I said before, water shoes.
Well, let's, what I mean is, how have we helped you to deal with this? What are the, some of the things that we that you've done? Remember we were talking about occupational therapy and physical therapy and things like speech. Like speech helped you to better tolerate different types of foods, which is weird because I had no idea speech did that, but that is something that speech does, is they help with feeding problems. Occupational therapy helped you learn to tolerate your socks a little bit better and clothing items. Not because we wanted to force you into anything, but because there are some situations where you just don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And so it helped you to adapt to those types of things. And I think you had a lot of fun, didn't you? You really enjoyed it.
Yes.
He got to the point where he sort of, he did so well that there was nothing left for them to do. And so we take a break, and then they reevaluate him. And see if maybe he needs to keep working on things. But you've been doing really well. You have, you're now wearing shoes and socks consistently when you have to. You do really well. You've got clothes that you wear. We just have sort of, it's taken a while to sort of narrow down the types of clothing that works for you. But I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you want to say before we...
I don't know.
Are sensory issues very real? They're not just people making things up, right?
Heck no.
It's a very real life.
Yes.
It's a very real life thing, and it's
and
something
everyone should understand that. Like,
it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, and it's hard
if
when
you're
you,
a parent and your kid like they have sensory issues, just. Try and ask them, like, what don't you like? Because that really helped me. That really helped me to understand that there's other foods that I could eat. Like, if there's any parents again, you might have any ideas that, like, like, I have problems with the mac and cheese. Like, Mom told me about the Velveeta.
And so you tried that?
Yeah.
And that ended up being something that you could do. And so it's real, and you don't want to give up. And parents need to be patient with their kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as frustrating as it is for me as a parent, right? Trying to get you to eat or trying to buy you shoes or something, it's so much harder for you than it is for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a very important message, I think, that, you know, we have to be patient and understanding, and we have to work with our kids to help them navigate the world when they have sensory problems, and that's not an easy thing to do. So I really appreciate you talking to us, and I'm sure you'll be on episodes as we go forward.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to say quickly that's appropriate before we sign off? We have to be careful because you don't always have appropriate things to say.
No more Jason.
Okay, yeah. I don't even know where you got that.
Jason?
What is it, from a commercial or something?
Yeah.
You've never seen that. They don't watch movies like that.
No.
He just knows
because
from, like, commercials.
Because there's, like, an episode, I think there's, like, a commercial where... Jason's coming up behind someone, and he's like about to slash the head off, and he was like talking about like car insurance, and Jason was like, "Oh yeah, that's great.
Oh,
there's other stuff like that too, on blah 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 blah."
Oh, so you're talking about like that? It's like a Geico commercial.
Yeah.
Or something? Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say they do not watch those kinds of movies. So
no.
Anyhow, thank you, and I look forward to having you on again.
Yeah. Bye.
All right. As I mentioned in the introduction, one of the other things I wanted to talk about today is the differences between meltdowns and tantrums. It's important to understand what a meltdown is in order to understand why it's different from a tantrum. So basically, a meltdown is an involuntary act that a child or an adult with autism will experience when they have become overstimulated. We talked about it in a previous segment about overstimulation, where a person takes in too much stimulus and their body just is overwhelmed. It bogs down, like it can't process anything else, and the only thing it has to do is purge, and that purge is what we see as a meltdown. Meltdowns can range, a variety of different behaviors. Everybody may experience meltdown differently. But to the uneducated person or someone who's not familiar with the differences, it'll look a lot like a tantrum. It'll look a lot like someone throwing a fit because they're not getting their way or, something along those lines. When in reality, that person that's experiencing the meltdown is in distress. They are in pain, and they need compassion. They need their space. They need time to sort of go through the process of unloading, and then we can begin to rebuild afterwards. Meltdowns can happen at inopportune times. I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I have had more than my share of meltdowns in public places with my kids, and it's just sort of something that happens. I mean, you don't discipline a meltdown. You don't punish a child for having a meltdown. You provide them what they need to work through it. You give them their space. You show them compassion, and you just sort of let it work itself out. Make sure everybody's safe and things like that. But it just has to sort of run its course. A tantrum is much different. A tantrum is a willful act meant to manipulate behavior. So a child is at the store, they ask mom and dad for a candy bar or a toy, mom and dad say no, child throws a fit. That fit or that tantrum is meant to manipulate the parent into giving them what they want. And as the parent continues to resist giving them what they want, that tantrum may escalate. They may go from screaming to stomping their feet or throwing things out of the cart or rolling around on the ground. That's a tantrum, and if a parent caves in and gives the kid what they want, the kid can shut it off like that and they just move on like nothing happened. That's a tantrum. That can be a disciplinary problem. I mean, it's a normal part of life for kids as they develop, but that's something that you can find ways of showing your kids better ways of coping with things than tantrums. Everybody has a different view on what you do, but you can discipline a tantrum. You can not reward that type of behavior, I guess is a better way to put that. So you don't reward, a child for having a tantrum. But a meltdown is different. And what happens very often is, people will witness a child experiencing a meltdown in a public place, maybe a grocery store or a restaurant or something like that, and they assume that this is a disciplinary issue, and they don't understand why the parents can't control their kid, why they can't get their kid to stop screaming, why is this kid making a scene, it's driving me crazy. And sometimes people are ballsy enough to say something, and sometimes what they say is not very nice. It's very hurtful. It's very ignorant. It's very just awful, the things that I've heard. And I hear from other parents, it's a very common thing, you know, you need to discipline your kid. If that were my kid, a good whooping would, you know, get them in line, or, you know, something along those lines, because they don't understand what they're seeing, you know, and they make assumptions that you're a bad parent or your kid's a spoiled brat. And that just isn't the way it is. So it's very frustrating. It's very disheartening. It's very demoralizing to deal with those things, you know, and as a parent, it's stressful just to watch your child go through a meltdown, because you know what they're experiencing, like you know about what they're experiencing. It's hard to understand unless you are actually experiencing the overstimulation. So I don't want to claim to have knowledge of that on a first-hand basis, because I don't. But I know what it's like to see my kids in distress. And I know how painful it is for me as a parent to know that they're in distress and there isn't anything I can do to help them aside from helping them work through it, helping them work through the meltdown, trying to make sure that they stay safe, trying to limit any other type of anything that could cause them more distress. You know, when my kids are melting down, they don't want to be touched. They don't want to be talked to. We just sort of, you know, try and keep the area as safe as we can. If we have to, you know, for safety reasons, we may move them to a different location. But you can't, I mean, talking them through it isn't something that's usually possible. You know, you could be talking to them directly and they're not even paying attention to what you're saying. They don't hear anything. They're not paying attention. They are just purging. They are on overload, you know, and so it's a much different animal than a tantrum. And I really wish people would take the time to understand the difference. And I wish that we would not use the terms interchangeably. I think that's a large part of the problem. We use tantrum and meltdowns interchangeably, and that really sends the wrong message, you know, to the general public. And so, you know, I really hope this has helped you to sort of understand the difference. Again, a meltdown is an involuntary act. You know, it's a person who has been overstimulated. It's their body just releasing all of that anxiety and energy and whatever that's built up as a result of the overstimulation. A person who is having a tantrum is trying to manipulate someone else's behavior in order to get something that they want or something that was taken away. It is a willful act. It is a very common thing, especially in young children. Most of the time they outgrow it. You know, it can be a disciplinary thing. You know, you don't want to reward a tantrum. But again, they're very different things. So please keep that in mind. When you see somebody in public who may be experiencing something like that, don't just assume that it's, a kid just throwing a fit because they're not getting their way. That child may be in distress, and those parents are probably struggling along with their child because they know their child's in pain. And negative comments or hurtful comments, ignorant comments, all that does is make it worse, and it makes it harder for that family. And so just keep that in mind. Don't judge people. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know what's behind the actions that you're seeing. You don't know what's beneath the surface. So don't judge. You know, offer a smile. Sort of let them know, hey, you know what, it's okay. Is there anything we can do to help? Things like that are very positive and can make, I'm telling you, like a kind comment can make all the difference in the world to a parent like me when we're in a moment that, you know, we're vulnerable. You know, our child's in distress. They're making a scene. There's nothing we can do about it. It's not the kid's fault. It just is what it is. And someone showing compassion can mean everything. So please keep that in mind going forward. I really appreciate your time, guys. Thank you again for tuning in. I want to thank Emmett for taking the time to talk to us about sensory processing disorder and how it impacts his life. I want to try and involve all of my kids and my wife in episodes as we go forward. I have a couple of ideas that I'm looking at doing. So again, you can subscribe to the Autism Dad podcast on every major app. You can find me at theautismdad.com. All of my social media links and stuff are at the top of the page. So hit me up if you need anything. Outside of that, I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks.